Senate Finance Committee to order. Today is February the 4th. We're in State Capitol Senate Finance Room. It's 9 a.m. Please silence your cell phones. Joining me today are Senator Stedman, Senator Olson, Senator Keel, Senator Merrick, Senator Kaufman, myself, Senator Hoffman. Senator Cronk is excused today. Today's agenda, we have the governor's supplemental overview. Lacey Sanders, the director of the Office of Management and Budget, come forward and submit the her presentation. Also in the audience is Senator Giesel. Ms. Sanders.
Good morning. For the record, my name is Lacey Sanders. I am the Office of Management and Budget Director for the governor. And as noted today, I was going to walk through an overview of the fiscal year 2026 supplemental budget that was transmitted to the legislature yesterday. Each year, per statute, the supplemental budget is required to be transmitted to the legislature by the 15th day of session. And this is the start of that process. We have historically brought as many as the items that we are known and have available to the committee at this by this deadline. That does not mean that there are not items that may still come before the committee as we work through the process during session, as well as we have the departments bringing us additional items. So to get started, I'll start on slide 2. This slide 2 is a reflection of an updated version of the supplemental budget fiscal summary. So for fiscal year 2026, this includes both the enacted FY26 budget, which we refer to as management plan, plus the supplementals that were proposed on the December 11th budget, and then as well the supplementals that were introduced yesterday in the February 3rd budget. As you can see, the overall surplus is now deficit is now $425.9 million.
I like surplus better.
I do as well. Again, that's proposed to be drawn from the Constitutional Budget Reserve Fund. I'm going to fast forward, if it's okay, to slide 3. I think it's a little easier to see the breakdown. So starting with the operating supplemental request, as you'll see at the top, we have the $95 million in general funds for the supplemental request that we covered in the earlier weeks. This is a $55 million placeholder for the fire fund deposit. There were two letters to the legislature during the interim that included $55 million to be deposited into that fund. We are still working on the remainder of the supplemental need that will be required for fiscal year 2026, working closely with the Department of Natural Resources to determine what that is, and at that time we will submit a change record for that amount. Additionally, in there, in this December 11th number, is the $40 million that we had talked about earlier for the disaster relief fund. So moving on down, this is a summary of the, by agency, of the amounts that are requested. I'm going to highlight a few items on the next slide. But overall, the supplementals that were submitted yesterday total $79.1 million in unrestricted general funds, and a total of $881 million overall. The largest increase is going to be, you know, in the federal component when we're talking about Medicaid. That shows up within the Department of Health's line. And again, on the next slide, I'll talk through some of these high-level items. So overall, the total operating supplementals are $174.1 million in general funds between the December 11th and the February 3rd date. So just to highlight a few of the items that are included in this operating budget for supplementals. We'll start with the Department of Administration. We have $3.3 million of UGF funding proposed as a multi-year supplemental, meaning that it would cover multiple fiscal years. And I should reference also in your packets, you do have a very large spreadsheet with all of the items. I wasn't planning on going through each individual item, but happy to address any items that are on the spreadsheet. But there, historically, this division has had a multi-year appropriation that has allowed them to contract out for their criminal case backlog needs. And that funding is expiring and is no longer there. And so they would like an additional $3.3 million to work through working through the case backlog over the next two fiscal years, so fiscal year 2026 and 2027. A notable item within the Department of Corrections, we continue to work with the Department of Corrections on evaluating what their total operational needs are within the division, or excuse me, within the department. As you may remember, there were two significant reductions to the Department of Corrections budget last year. One had to do with $7.5 million for the closure of the Spring Creek Correctional Center, and then as well a $6.8 million reduction associated with a letter of agreement that was no longer in place. We have continued to struggle with the estimating what the costs are associated with the budget for the Department of Corrections. There are many unanticipated needs that this agency experiences, as well as having 24-hour institution that has to ensure that their minimum staffing needs are met. And that we estimate is going to cost approximately $20 million in fiscal year 2026 to meet those, to bring their funding level back up to an amount that will meet the needs of closing out the fiscal year in a positive balance.
On that topic.
Yep.
I'm more concerned about how we can control those costs instead of trying to figure out the current system that's being utilized. It seems as though there has to be some cost control measures taken within department. Are there any cost control measures from the administration's viewpoint that are being looked at?
Chair Hoffman, if I may, I have Commissioner Winkleman here in the room today. I would request that she join us at the table to speak to any operational changes that she might be making or can't make.
Welcome, Ms. Winkleman.
Great. Thank you. For the record, Jen Winkleman, Commissioner for the Department of Corrections. So to the chair, we are looking at operational changes daily in trying to meet these budget shortfalls, if you will. I would say it is consistently, I'll call it a perfect storm, whether that's staffing levels or vacancy rates, cuts. We have incidents happen. I used this example. I was speaking with OMB yesterday. We had an example at Spring Creek this past weekend that cost us just under $200,000 that we did not plan for, and that was essentially a small riot on the yard. And so we are looking every day to make these changes, but I think it has been somewhat of a perfect storm with staffing and a real complex individual coming to us.
Senator Stedman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think the storm has been going on for a couple of years, right? This isn't like a surprise weather forecast. But, Mr. Chairman, I've had several of our colleagues approach me and most likely the chairman on revisiting the whole issue of exporting some prisoners south to lower costs and get control of this, which is a reversal from maybe a decade ago when we talked about bringing them home so they can be closer to their families. I'm not so sure that that's worked financially out very well for us. I just wanted to mention that. And I'm talking about the more hardened of the criminals, not somebody that might be visiting our establishment for a year or two, but ones that are going to be in here for 20, 30 years. So I just thought I'd mention that.
Do you have a response, Ms. Winkleman?
Yeah, if I may, thank you. Thank you for the comment. It is something that it runs through my mind. And I will say, digress for just a second, we do transfer inmates out of state if there are medical needs that maybe Alaska can't meet, or if there's some sort of a separation that we need to have. And I'll use the example of a law enforcement officer that becomes arrested and becomes part of the system, and we need to keep them away for their safety as well as others, and so we'll transfer. Where it gets a little bit more complicated, and I just wanted to state this piece for the record, is that we would go out to an RFP for a contract out of state, but then it is identifying who do we want to send? Which inmates would we want to send out of state? Is there room for inmates at another facility? Because I do know that due to staffing issues in many states, they are sending inmates out of their state. And I'll use Montana, for example. They are sending prisoners down to Arizona right now, which fill up the private beds elsewhere. I would also say that corrections, being as large as we are for staffing, coupled with the RFP process, we would have to determine what community. In order to achieve the savings, it would be likely closing down a facility, and what community would we be doing that in, recognizing that we employ a lot of individuals and a lot of state employees in these, and they do enter into a public safety element by being in community. It becomes almost a natural deterrent. It becomes a staff member that may stop at a facility or a grocery store in uniform. It becomes a different type of deterrent of public safety in a community. I am willing to have any of these conversations. I don't want to make these decisions because I recognize the impact is far, far greater with the legislature, with local communities. The administration is willing to have these conversations, but these are the factors that we are thinking about that come into play every time we start talking about it. And as members of this body know, we have done it, I believe it's three previous times, and we have wound up either bringing them back or reopening, in the latest case was Palmer, at quite a significant cost. And so having to weigh out all of those factors is something that I think having a conversation is absolutely, I appreciate your comment, because it is something that we're constantly thinking about what that would look like. So,
I think we have to have a serious conversation about that topic, because the current situation is, from my viewpoint, unaffordable. And that is a long-term potential solution. On the short-term basis, I think people have mentioned to me that the Department of Corrections or the administration needs to look at the overtime situation and put the people that are on the lower spectrum of the pay scale in the overtime situation positions for overtime, and not utilizing people that are on the high end of the pay scale spectrum. I wonder if you could give me the, for the last 12 months, give me a report on who those individuals are and what pay scales they're getting for overtime. And also give me the individuals that are below them in pay scales, and what the savings would have been if we had utilized the individuals at the lower end of the pay scale.
Yeah, to the chair, great point. I do recognize, and we can certainly get you a report on the overtime hours. I would also state that some of how it is driven is by the collective bargaining agreement and how folks sign up for their shifts and things like that. So there's a few factors outside of our control.
Understanding yeah. that, but we need the information yeah. so that people that are at the negotiation table have those tools in front of them so that they're making the best financial decisions for the state of Alaska. You know, I would ask you then, has that information been available to the bargaining units when they are at the table? Has that information been available?
Yeah, to the chair, yes, yes. We do provide the same reports, and we will ensure that we get that to you as well.
Senator Stedman.
This is a follow-up. I think this subject has been on the table before on previous budgets the last couple of years, and the concern expressed by the chairman of the way the negotiating agreement is structured, where the most senior people grab the overtime and basically spiral our budgets out of control. It just doesn't work. So we got to come up with some parameters on it one way or the other. And I don't, just for clarity, I don't think the chairman's concerned about the individual's name per se. You know, we're talking about the concept here of the amount of people and their, and maybe their years of service that we could be listed, or somehow they could list it, because we're not interested in the individual per se, but it's a concept here. And it's a problem when we look at, Mr. Chairman, to me it's a problem when we look at all the other agencies up and down. And we had a meeting yesterday in Senate Transportation about the squeeze out of DOT and the reorganization of DOT from budget reductions. So there is rippling effects as one department expands exponentially, and we've got to contract somewhere else because we've got our bookends that we have to keep the budget within. And some of us at that meeting yesterday afternoon were very concerned about DOT making sure that they operate in an efficient manner and can do what they're supposed to do to keep the roads open and safe to drive on.
And when you're talking about a $20 million increment on a long-term basis, and go back and look at the increases over the last 3 years for the Department of Corrections, particularly in salaries, that what's magnified is those higher salaries have been rolled into retirement and benefits. And someone that is collecting, in some cases, maybe doubling their salaries and doubling their retirement, give cause to me that maybe that also should be looked at in future negotiations, where overtime should not be utilized to calculate somebody's retirement benefits. I'm going to ask Senator Stedman if he might comment on that.
Well,
since you have been looked at the retirement system probably yes. more than anyone else in yeah. this building.
Yes, it is a concern, and I know there's some limits on it. But we have a very rich retirement system, regardless of which one you pick around the state, and we just don't want to be taken advantage of. It's, you know, the state employees are very well taken care of. But, you know, we just don't want it to become abusive, no matter what tier you're in. That's not a tier conversation. It's just a concept conversation.
Thank you,
we can have, maybe when we have retirement and benefits in front of us, we can talk to them about how they're capped, salaries are capped, and when SBS stops and starts and stuff, and so we can get a full grasp of that. But when we look at all our departments, corrections really sticks out the last couple, 3 years. And I know the OMB director's been working on it. And in earnest, it's not something that has caught them by surprise. But we got to get control of it one way or the other.
Thank you, Senator Stedman. Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess the two co-chairs stole most of my thunder, so I won't rage. I'll actually just start with just a clarifying question to the OMB director. I may have misheard. Did you say we closed Spring Creek Correctional Center, or did we close one MOD at Spring Creek?
Through the chair, Senator Keel, I should have clarified. It was one MOD.
Okay. Thank you. That's helpful. I wasn't sure if I'd misunderstood that. In terms of the cost growth and the pattern of supplementals share the concerns. As I understand it, this particular bargaining unit, is the administration currently bargaining with the correctional officers?
Through the chair, Senator Keel, so this correctional union contract is under interest arbitration, which means there is no addressing the items that Senator Hoffman or Senator Stedman are speaking to about changing variables that may apply to signing up a correctional officer for overtime. Right now, it's purely salaries that are discussed, and yes, that process is in place right now.
Follow. Senator Keel.
Prior to interest arbitration, I know that the three unions that represent Marine Highway System workers, for many years we heard complaints about some of the difficulties in managing the system and its costs because of some of the provisions in those unions. And in the last couple of rounds, DOT has participated in those bargaining sessions. Has the Department of Corrections or perhaps OMB been involved in this particular contract, again, prior to this arbitration?
Through the chair, Senator Keel, so this is the third year of interest arbitration. I have only been in this role for 3 years, so I can't speak to what may have done prior to that. But I'm speaking for Commissioner Winkleman here. She is involved in those conversations. OMB's not involved in those conversations other than providing analysis on numbers and what cost estimates would look like. So I think to your point, when we get through interest arbitration and can go back to the table to negotiate with this particular union, yes, the commissioner will be involved in those conversations. And hopefully she has a list of items ready to go to speak with those that are negotiating.
Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. That's good news. That's helpful. I think bargaining those things across the table as equals with people who actually have to manage the budget is going to be crucial. I guess I will just express a little concern about the notion of shipping Alaskans to warehouses outside. We've done that in the past. The cleanup has been both expensive and ugly, and I don't know that that's a long-term cost we want to bear. But I can't disagree at all about the cost concerns. Are there other tools that the legislature can give the Department of Corrections, the Office of Management and Budget, to address the growth in this department's budget?
So through the chair to Senator Keel, I will think on that. But I think my quick answer is if we could get staffed, which is a nationwide problem, particularly in corrections, and our medical costs with the complex individuals that are coming through our door, those are the drivers. And those are a little bit trickier to figure out how to legislate and help get this under control, because those are the two huge drivers of our, I mean, clearly we're the catcher's mitt of all other policy changes upstream to us, but I think that just simply put, our personal services, due to vacancies and the fact that the position or the posts have to be filled, drive so much of it, as well as the medical.
Mr. Chairman, I know we've spent a lot of time on corrections. If we could maybe hear back at some point about additional efforts to fill the vacancies at corrections, whether that's hiring bonuses, retention, whatever the administration's doing, that'd be great.
I totally agree. When you're spending twice as much on overtime, maybe there should be consideration of bonuses to hire individuals that are one-time expenditures, because if the overtime situation is going to be an ongoing cost, this is seriously bad management. Senator Kaufman.
Thank you. through the chair, sorry, my throat's closing up. I hear an opportunity here that I think we need to apply to many discussions we're going to have along the same vein of cost management. And I think it would help if when we're discussing cost management in a department that we have like a cost management proposal. I think it's a good time for us to have on the table departmental cost management proposals that way we're looking at a proposal, at least an idea, that if we had the broader support of the legislature and we had understanding of what the departments were trying to do, their constraints, the challenges, the opportunities that are in there, and then we could have a more meaningful conversation about a programmatic cost management. I know the time's short for this budget cycle, but I think it would be something really good to have in front of us since we're dealing with such tight budgets, where we could have the opportunities at least identified in a one-pager, at least something that we can look at and say, hey, here's what we're dealing with, but here's what we see is doable and the time frame for that.
Ms. Winkleman, do you have a response to that comment?
Through the chair to Senator Kaufman, I do agree, and it is something that I would say we are working with OMB regularly on, maybe without the title of what, but essentially yes, and I am very open to it. I'm open to all sorts of ideas, and I talk to my counterparts in the lower 48 and hear about some of their staffing issues and their overtime driving up their budgets the way it is, and I know it is. We run at minimum manning as is, and then we have an incident come, and we have to bring in additional staff that we don't really have, and that just becomes tricky and trying to figure out how to plan for that. So thank you.
Thank you. In response to Senator Keel, I would agree with the problematic issues of sending people out of state. But if we cannot hire individuals, and that seems to be the case for the last 3 years, if not longer, we need to look at alternatives. If we're faced with this problem of overtime, this issue cannot go on, Senator Keel. So you have the budget. Take your magic wand and fix it. Senator Stedman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was wondering on we've got a hiring freeze across the state. What effect has the hiring freeze had in filling these roles?
So through the chair to Senator Stedman, we have, because so many of our positions are fire, life, and safety, we have a waiver for those. So I would say that it's had limited in some of our administrative functions, certainly, but not when it comes to our officers and what we are talking and what is driving the overtime.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Any further questions for Ms. Winkleman while she's at the table? If not, Ms. Sanders, please continue. And I apologize to the committee, but this is one of the biggest increments, and it has been one that has been ongoing for several years. So that is why I think the committee needs to bring this up and have a dialogue regarding this particular supplemental request. Ms. Sanders?
Thank you. So I'll just touch briefly on the second two bullets under the Department of Corrections. We have $1.1 million for the Community Residential Center bed contract obligations. This is just the cost of ensuring that our contracts are met for the current fiscal year. And then just under $3 million for healthcare operational needs. So this is what Commissioner Winkleman was speaking to the high medical needs that we're experiencing in our institutions with the population that we have. Moving on to the Department of Health, the first item is I'm going to try and provide a little bit of explanation of what we're facing here. This is $272 million of federal receipt authority for the Rural Health Transformation Funds that were recently awarded to the state of Alaska at the federal level. As you all may be aware, the LBNA, or Legislative Budget and Audit Committee, took this item up in November and provided $200 million worth of federal authority based on an estimate at that time on what the state would receive. That authority was provided for fiscal year 2026 only. So for the supplemental budget, we are providing almost a duplication, but a $272 million federal receipt authority as a multi-year. The first tranche of funding that the state of Alaska will receive will cover three fiscal years that it's available to be spent. And then we anticipate you will see a secondary multi-year appropriation for the next tranche of funding in fiscal year 2027. That would cover 27, 28, and 29, and then we would continue each year with those multi-years through the 5 years that the Department of Health expects to receive that funding. So we can take action in the accounting system to restrict the $200 million that was received for the LBNA RPL that was received to ensure that we can obligate the $272 million over the three-year time period that is allowed to be spent. Happy to take questions if there are any.
First of all, this particular appropriation, as you said, is multi-year. It has the potential to transform, as is in the title, healthcare in the state of Alaska. This has been receiving a lot of dialogue in this building on both sides of the aisle and both parties. This is going to get a lot of scrutiny through the process, and this committee probably will be delving into it further. But the legislature, the drift I'm getting is the legislature wants to be involved in how those dollars are being appropriated and how the plan is being presented that will improve health care throughout the state of Alaska. I would inform the administration that the legislature is the appropriating body while we are in session. We understand that this is a fast-moving program, and the administration went to LBNA for RPL that got approval. But we are now in session, and there's great concern on what is happening with these dollars and how the bottom line is how we as appropriators are going to be involved and making sure that rural health, and that is not just off the rail belt, Alaska is categorized as rural. So everyone in the state is going to be affected by the expenditure of these dollars. And the question that I have is, how are these dollars going to improve the health care of people in Tuntutuliak as well as in Anchorage?
Chair Hoffman, great questions. I will defer to Commissioner Hedberg to present to this committee.
Please. Further questions or comments upon this very important appropriation by committee? Thank you. Please proceed.
Thank you. Moving down to the second bullet, in the Division of Public Assistance, we have been working through their budget as well and determining what their actual cost should be reflected as. The division has been receiving several years of multi-year appropriations that are no longer available to cover the costs. And so now that those appropriations are no longer in place, we have a request for just over $21 million to ensure that the costs associated with their IT systems or their eligibility systems is covered. It's approximately $11.2 million of state funds and $9 million in federal funds. In continuing down, we also have a contract, what's referred to as the Virtual Contact Center. This is the contract that is working through items such as eligibility. This was an item that was not funded last year in the budget. That contract has been continued. I believe it was a request of about $8 million last year. The department worked through the process of identifying where some of the system costs could be Medicaid eligible. So a portion of the cost is being covered by Medicaid funding. The remainder, $5.9 million, is needed to address the remainder of that contract. And then lastly, the final bullet is the update for the Medicaid payments. This is a total of $456 million. Of that, $36.4 million is state funds or match, and the remainder is $420 million of federal receipts. This is in alignment with the projection that was provided to the legislature at the midway through December. We will have an update to the committee, I believe, next week on Medicaid payment update that the Department of Health completes for February per the intent language. So this is the number that follows the December estimate, and we will have a revised estimate to the committee here shortly.
Questions? Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Not to sound like the member across the table from me, but could we get an update on the long-running expensive IT project to get the eligibility system at health off the old mainframe?
Through the chair, Senator Keel, I believe Pam Allen is in the room and may be able to speak to the status of that project.
Did you hear the question?
I did.
Please identify yourself. And
through the chair, Senator Keel, for the record, Pam Halloran, Assistant Commissioner for the Department of Health. Thanks for the question. So as far as the eligibility system, there's a lot of work, and that is one of the contributing factors to the $21 million request. As that work is being completed, the costs are shifting from capital to operating. And so there is progress, and we're looking forward to having an integrated system, one integrated system that maps all of our systems, the ARIES, and all of the eligibility systems for all of our programs into one modernized system. So we're close. We're looking forward to getting off the mainframe, which is a huge step in the end of FY28.
Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Can you or can someone refresh my memory about when our accuracy rates start affecting our federal match rates for some of these programs? Is it before the end of FY28?
Through the chair, Senator Keel, it is not in FY27. I believe it begins in FY28, federal beginning October 1, FY28, although we plan to seek a waiver.
Here's hoping. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Keel. Any further questions?
Thank you.
For Ms. Halloran. Thank you. Ms. Okay. Sanders, please proceed.
All right. So on slide number 5, and for the record, this is Lacey Sanders, just for the people taking minutes. Here we have a summary of the total supplementals for capital budget. So December 11th was the introduction of the match for the State Transportation Improvement Program, or the STIP, that's $70 million. There are no general funds being requested in the capital budget in the February 3rd submission. We have a variety of other items, and I will highlight some of the larger items on the next slide, but the total capital supplementals at this point total $70.2 million of general funds and $128.1 million in total. And with that, I'll move to slide number 6 to highlight some of those capital supplemental items. In the Department of Commerce, Community and Economic Development, we have $5 million in federal receipts for the Alaska Energy Authority Bulk Fuel Upgrades High Energy Cost Grant that they are receiving. So this is federal receipt authority to allow them to expend towards the Bulk Fuel Upgrades Program. In addition to that, there's $25 million of what we refer to as statutory designated program receipts. So this is contractual funding or an outside entity that is not a state organization or a federal organization that will be providing $25 million in grant funding or in grant funding to the Alaska Energy Authority for bulk fuel upgrades. That funding is coming from the Denali Commission and ANTCH, which I am blanking on what that acronym stands for at the moment because I'm put on the spot. Apologies. And then lastly, we have a $1.2 million increase for the Alaska Oil and Gas Conservation Commission. This is a continuation of a project that was started last year for their risk-based data management system upgrade. So this is phase two. We put a full request forward last year, and there was concerns about the receipts being appropriated in the year that they were available. So we just continue that project over multiple years as those receipts are available for appropriation.
And THC, Alaska Native Health Tribal Consortium.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate that. In the Department of Natural Resources, there is $6 million of that statutory designated program receipt authority again. This is a grant from the Alaska Tribal Native Tribal Health Consortium for work evaluating the Alaska Native communities' coastlines for flood and other related impacts that they are facing or experiencing due to weather. In the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities, we have seen an increase and an uptick in the department's response to disasters across the state. So when there is either the, you know, for example, the Juneau snowstorm that we experienced or another community has something happening in it, the Typhoon Halong is another example. There are substantial costs associated with the department responding. Some of those costs are not covered by the federal agency FEMA and may not be eligible for reimbursement. The department went through their outstanding capital projects and identified $5.1 million of ended projects that could be used towards that emergency response. And it's being proposed as a capital project so that they can use it over several years. And then lastly, there's $8 million in the University of Alaska's budget, again, for that statutory designated program receipts. There was a gift for the Alaska Museum of the North Planetarium, totaling $8 million. Chair Hoffman, I am happy to take questions. I was just going to highlight some of the items today, but if members have questions about specific items that I did not cover today, I'm happy to address those as well.
Senator Stedman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Sanders, while you're here, even though this is more applicable to coming attractions in FY27, there's becoming significant concern dealing with the Alaska Marine Highway and the federal grants that are held up in Washington. And we've been working with some cash flow modeling and some forward-looking Ouija boards, and it looks like it's kind of scary in the event that we don't get those funds released. And my understanding is DOT is going to go to Washington and have a dialogue with some of the folks at federal DOT, I guess, and see if they can't spring that money loose. But I think it'd be prudent for us to work with the Office of Management and Budget and the Marine Highway and start modeling some of the contingencies, because some of our limited view, when we look at things, that there's a reasonable chance we could run out of funds next January, and that would put the Marine Highway in a very, very difficult predicament of running even reduced schedules and losing more employees or tying up the whole fleet and pretty much imploding the place. Neither one of those are acceptable, so we need to come up with a solution and some contingency planning so we're not caught flat-footed. And I think on this subject, Mr. Chairman, it's we might be a little bit ahead of the administration on our concern. Maybe we suffer from a little paranoia, I'm not sure, on the Marine Highway, but nevertheless, I would just suggest that we work together and try to come up with some planning so we minimize the indigestion of the situation. And also continue to try to keep stability with our employees at the Marine Highway so they're not concerned about their job next February.
Do you have a comment?
Through the chair, Senator Stedman, yes, we, you know, everything that you have shared just now is the same things that we are looking at. I spoke with Commissioner Anderson late last week about this particular item. I know he presented to this committee. I know his staff, I have Director Don Panone in the room today. They are looking at this very carefully. Again, as you mentioned, Commissioner Anderson and their team will be going to D.C. So I have a short list in my office of things that I am tracking. This is definitely one of those things that is on there. Happy to look at variations of models with the committee, and we'll continue to see what outcome we can get at the federal level.
Thank you. Regarding the disaster out in Western Alaska, affecting Kipnuk and Kwigilnuk, I understand that there's 400 to 500 people that are still misplaced and not in those villages. I wonder if you can get to me what the time frame is and what the solution is to get some resemblance of normalcy when they will be returning to their communities.
Chair Hoffman, I can follow up with Director Brian Fisher to see if they have a timeline established. I don't have that information with me today. I
understand that. Further questions from committee members? Does that conclude your presentation, Senator Stedman?
Yeah, just want to make a comment here, just as an encouragement to the administration. I think the committee would like to expedite the supplemental, so we can concentrate on the difficulty we have in the upcoming current budget, FY27. And I would just encourage, Mr. Chairman, that the OMB work with the other body to ensure their understanding of what's in this bill, that we have not been adding to it. In fact, we've, you know, grudgingly are going to fund it all because we don't have any choice, but we need to get this document on the governor's desk so he could manage the state in a prudent manner, the sooner the better, and give us more time to figure out FY27 and on to a view of what situation we might be in FY28.
It's my understanding that the administration is submitting legislation to request this supplemental. Is that correct?
Chair Hoffman, the supplemental bill was transmitted to the legislature on Monday. I believe it was read across yesterday, or
yes.
Maybe it's today. I'm missing my days up today.
To follow up, it's the intent to work with the other body, and as was stated, we don't anticipate adding anything that the governor is not requesting, but we need to have an understanding of what those items are with the other body. I would express to the administration that we want to work with you, and we need the assistance of all the legislators in the House and in the Senate to look at the request and see that we can get the necessary support for the governor's request. We need to understand that this is the governor's request, and when we are talking about funding, the people of Alaska should well understand that the vast majority of this, if not all, is going to come from the Constitutional Budget Reserve account. That account has been around for many, many years, but to access that account requires three-quarter vote from the House and three-quarter vote from the Senate. In the Senate, that is 15 votes, and in the House, that is 30 votes. And hopefully we can get the support from all the people in the legislature to support the governor's request to fund all of these items. So with that, do you have any closing comments?
Chair Hoffman, no, thank you. I will say I have a very intelligent group of individuals supporting me. All of them are available to ask questions if people have questions about what's been presented or an item that was not covered today. I am available to take questions as well, and thank you for your time today.
And we look forward to working with administration to hopefully they can gather support not only from the finance committees, but from all the members of the legislature, since it is a request for the governor to provide the services that Alaskans expect to receive. Any final questions or comments by committee members? With that, that concludes the business today. Is there with that, as I said, that concludes the business today. There is no meeting scheduled for tomorrow or Friday. Our next meeting will be on February the 9th. We will be having an update from the Division of Retirement and Benefits on PERS and TERS. We are adjourned.